And he's going to give us his commentary in this week's Torah portion. Please, let's make sure our cell phones and laptops, well, tablets, anything like that is quiet, silent, off, vibrate.
And your tray tables in their upright and locked position. And you're going to want to fasten your seat belts because we're studying the life of Joseph. The parasha for this week is entitled Miketz, meaning at the conclusion, and it covers Genesis 41:1 through 44:17. Joseph has been in prison in Egypt on a bogus rape charge or attempted rape. Poor Joseph, betrayed by his brothers, enslaved in Egypt, imprisoned on false charges, but everywhere he went, Joseph conducted himself with integrity, and God was with him. Eventually, Joseph was given charge over Pharaoh's chief cupbearer and chief baker, who had been jailed. One night, they each had a perplexing dream, and we read last week that Joseph was able to interpret them, foretelling their future. Sure enough, exactly as Joseph interpreted the dreams, the chief cupbearer was restored to his office 3 days later, and the same day the chief baker was hanged. Now, Joseph had asked the cupbearer to please put in a good word for him to Pharaoh, because he was innocent. He didn't deserve to be in prison. But the cupbearer forgot all about Joseph for 2 full years. Now, how would you have handled so much injustice and such unrealized hopes? How would you have handled that? But you know, by all indications, Joseph continued to do his work diligently, and God was with him. But Joseph couldn't possibly have known just how dramatically things were about to turn around. Another strange series of dreams, this time interrupting the sleep of the most powerful man on earth. Pharaoh summoned his wise men and magicians, but they were all at a loss to declare the meaning of his dream. And the cupbearer, who in ancient Near Eastern society was considered like a close, trusted advisor, suddenly remembered and was horrified and had to admit that he had forgotten about Joseph. He told Pharaoh about this impressive young Hebrew in the prison who interprets dreams. Joseph was summoned at once to the palace, and he immediately was able to interpret Pharaoh's dreams, which were really one and the same. 7 years of bumper crops were on the way. Great prosperity. 7 years of bumper crops, which would be followed by 7 years of devastating famine, so severe that that entire part of the world would be affected and all of the previous prosperity would be forgotten. Joseph advised Pharaoh to appoint someone to oversee the systematic storing up of grain during these plentiful years to be in readiness for that coming famine. And Pharaoh said, "Great idea, Joseph. You just wrote your job description." In a single day, Joseph ascended from the prison to the palace, from lowly prisoner to second in command over all the land of Egypt. Pharaoh was delighted with Joseph and gave him his signet ring, fine robes, a gold chain, a wife from a prominent family, and even a new name. Joseph eventually fathered 2 sons whom he named Manasseh and Ephraim, from the verbs meaning to forget and to be fruitful. You see, he affirmed that God had enabled him to forget his former woes and had made him very fruitful there. Meanwhile, Joseph diligently stored away 1/5 of the grain during these good years. So much was stored up that they lost track and stopped counting. But the prosperity ended abruptly, and the famine began, a famine so widespread that the entire Middle East was affected. Now our attention is turned again to Jacob and his family back in Canaan. They're running out of grain, And by this time, everybody knows Egypt is the only place to find any. Jacob tells his sons to get off their tuchuses and go down to Egypt. But Benjamin, he keeps with him. He's already lost one of his beloved Rachel's sons. He's not about to risk the other. The brothers arrive in Egypt, and Joseph recognizes him as they appear before him and bow down to him. His dreams are being realized. But they didn't recognize him. It's been over 20 years since they last saw him. He decides to test them. "You're spies," he tells them. They protest their innocence. They explain their situation, and in the process, they tell him that they have one younger brother back home with their dad. Joseph puts them in a prison cell for 3 days, but then releases all of them except for Simon, who is to be kept in confinement. Joseph sells them grain, but he tells them plainly that to prove their honesty, they may not come back to Egypt without their younger brother. Only then will he release Shimon to them and give them more grain. On their way back home, they open their sacks and discovered that their money has been put back in the sacks. And now they fear that they're going to be accused of having stolen that grain. It's the beginning of a series of tests Joseph will put them through, precipitating a crisis which will force these brothers to confront their long hidden sin. When Jacob's family again runs out of grain, the brothers have no choice but to return to Egypt. And having no choice, and despite Jacob's ambivalence, this time the brothers bring Benjamin with them. Joseph orchestrates yet another crisis, planting his own ornate goblet in Benjamin's sack of grain before sending the brothers away. After they've departed, Joseph sends a guard to stop them. The guard rebukes them for having stolen his master's golden cup. They once again protest their innocence, and they challenge him. They invite him, "Open the sack, see for yourselves. We're innocent." And then they said, "Let the one who you find it with be a servant forever." They're so sure of their innocence. Well, he takes the challenge and opens the sacks of grain, and he comes to Benjamin's sack and opens it up, and there's that golden cup. The brothers are dismayed. Now, the others are told that they're free to leave, but Benjamin is going to be taken back to Egypt and made a slave. Well, the brothers are horrified. They can't possibly return home to their father without Benjamin. So they turn around and head back to Egypt to plead for his life. And that's where our parasha leaves off. It's a real cliffhanger. You know, Joseph would not be the last Jew taken captive to a foreign land, later to interpret a powerful king's dream and suddenly rise to preeminence. The very same thing happened to Daniel. You have to wonder, what is it about the Jewish people and the revealing of mysteries? It seems our people were chosen by God to unveil his seemingly mysterious plans and purposes to the nations. Rabbi Paul explained the mystery that Gentiles are welcome into the family of God. Well, let me just close with a few final thoughts. First of all, don't make the mistake of interpreting your immediate circumstances as though they represent the sum total of your life. You don't know any more than Joseph did what God may have in store for you. He reallocates assets, whether it's grain or human beings. He reallocates assets according to his infinite wisdom. You can trust him to fulfill his good purposes for you, but it will happen in his time. So learn to patiently wait on the Lord. And of course, Rabbi Lauren would urge us to learn from Joseph's example to be wise with our own resources. Don't spend money recklessly. Be sure you plan and save for the unforeseen. I believe that Joseph's betrayal and captivity and his sudden rise from the prison to the palace foreshadowed Messiah Yeshua's betrayal, death, resurrection, and exaltation. Jacob, or Israel, if you prefer, thought he would never see Joseph again, but as he would soon learn, Joseph was alive and well and exalted to a very high place. The people of Israel reckoned they would never see Yeshua again, reckoning him to be dead, but they will be proved wrong when he reveals himself in power and in all of his splendor. I've always marveled that Joseph is never specifically cited in the New Covenant scriptures as a type of Messiah Yeshua. It seems so obvious. The innocent one, hated by his brothers, sold for the price of a slave, suffering unjustly, and rising from the pit to the height of power, to the pinnacle, becoming the source of salvation even to those who hated him. I guess nothing needed to be said in the New Covenant. It was so obvious to all who knew the Genesis story and the story of Joseph. And as Joseph became the source of rescue, not only for his own spiteful brothers, but for many other peoples as well, so Yeshua has become the source of life for those who hated him and for men and women from every nation and people group. For if while we were enemies, we were reconciled to God through the death of his Son, how much more, having been reconciled, we shall be saved by his life. So let us give thanks to Adonai, the God of reversals, for his kindness to us, we who absolutely didn't deserve it. And let's go out of our way to be vocal about it, to herald the one to whom spiritually starving people may come and find eternal sustenance. Amen.